Mark Zuckerman joins us, and Mark has been on our show before. Nice to have him here. He covers the Nationals for the Mid-Atlantic Sports Network, MASN, and, of course, has been a beat writer for many years covering the team in Washington. So, Mark, great to have you here live at the Public House. Nice to see you.
You guys, too. Very nice to appreciate
that. Yeah, we're going to turn you up here. Pat's at the controls.
Working. It's not working.
All right, we'll see.
There, let's try that, Mark.
Go.
How about that?
There you go.
Very nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's one of the trickeries of sports broadcasting. Turn the mic on.
I know, and you know what? The funny thing, Mark, I apologize. I don't mean to look like a dunskey, but I had touched that button about six times out of anxiety, and I still didn't get it right.
Thank you, Mark.
But Mark is here. Mark Cover, it's a pleasure to have you here. We've had you on the show many times with the Nationals. And first of all, last night, and Andy Baggerly, one of your colleagues, has commented on Twitter what a great job you did last night getting the quotes from the players on the triple play last night. From their viewpoint, what did they say?
Yeah, thank you. And I mean, that's one of those that you just let them tell the story, because really it was such a bizarre play. You just literally had never happened in baseball history. And what was interesting was the different perspective of different guys. Zimmerman, of course, knew exactly what was going on because he knew he had caught the ball in the air, stepped on first, saw Rendon, the third baseman, jumping up and down, threw over there. I'm not sure how many other guys actually realized what was going on. Sammy Solis, the pitcher, said that he saw Zimmerman step on first, and he's looking at him throwing to third. He said, wait a minute, why aren't you throwing home? What's going on? You had Max Scherzer, other guys in the clubhouse who were out of the game, and the trainers, other people watching on TV and on the video screen, you can't exactly tell. And they're like, what's he doing? Why is he throwing to third base? And then it sort of hits everyone of what it was, and just this jubilation after that, because it wasn't just that they turned a triple play, but they did it to get out of a horrendous jam. Mm-hmm. And from a bullpen that has been, quite frankly, a mess here lately, the fact that they were able to turn that mess into somehow, you know, the greatest escape act you could draw up, that was a huge boost for them.
Well, Bochy had his viewpoint on it as well. He said, I had bases loaded, getting back in the game, and in one pitch, we were in the dugout. So how about Dusty? I thought he had an interesting comment about the triple play.
So, yeah, that's the other one. Of course, people ask him, okay, how many have you seen in your lifetime? There's a guy who's been in the game, 50 years almost. Yeah. And he says, well, this is actually the first one he's ever seen in person, not the first one he's been a part of, though. And here's the story behind it. When he was with the Dodgers back as a player, he goes into the bathroom.
Okay.
He comes out 30 seconds later, and everyone's saying, here's your glove. And he's like, what happened? It's a triple play. Said, how could that happen? I just left for 30 seconds. And so he actually did not physically see the triple play, and all these years later, he finally got to see one with his own eyes.
All right, Mark Zuckerman with us. He covers the Nats for MASN back in D.C. Let's talk about the bullpen, because with Papelbon and everything we've been talking about, it is a mess. They didn't go to him last night. And what is up with him? He is one of those guys, you mentioned the name, and he's sort of a magnet for a story.
Sure, yeah. I mean, really from the moment they acquired him last summer. Really, though, up until fairly recently, the performance was not that big of an issue. The numbers were pretty good for him. Now, the eye test said, he's not throwing as hard as he used to. He's not missing bats the way you would want from a closer. He had to squeak his way out of a few situations. But really, the last three times out had been a mess. You're talking about he took a loss in a tie game, he blew a save, and then the other night, and I thought this was the most telling thing of all, when with a three-run lead, gets an out, then puts two guys on base, and Dusty immediately pulled him from the game. That's a vote of no confidence in your closer. And so we've been trying to ask, okay, what happens now? Dusty's been coy about it, not wanting to say exactly, but it was telling that he didn't use him last night, and I think we're going to find out something here soon, because they are calling up a pitcher to start today's game, Reynaldo Lopez, and they need to make a corresponding roster move. Papelbon's velocity was down the other night, 88 miles an hour on his fastball. He says that there's nothing wrong physically. I would not be shocked if they decided that he needed to go on the DL as a way to sort of address this issue.
I mean, Papelbon's the kind of guy that can take a knife to a bunch of uniforms in the clubhouse. Yes. How soon do you expect him to, I don't know, blow his top? I mean, he's a little bit off. He's got a temper.
And we saw that at the end of last season with him and Bryce Harper, of course. I will admit, when we walked into the clubhouse the other night, I was kind of looking around. Maybe something had happened. Didn't appear that was the case. He talked to us. He was fairly, mellow, as you would say. And yesterday he was around, joking around with teammates. So what you wonder is this a guy that at age 35 is coming to grips with the fact that he's not what he used to be?
Okay.
And I think that's the larger issue here. He still believes and has believed that he could be a closer in this game for a long time. He's even talked about trying to catch up to Rivera's save record. I don't think he's going to get there. He's currently ninth on the all-time list. But it's sort of a – you wonder if deep down inside he's thinking to himself, he's 35 years old, the velocity's down, the performance isn't there. How much more do I really have in me?
Boy, it's part of baseball, especially you get to this time of year when people are tired anyway. And then the bullpen starts giving it up, and then they start pointing fingers and stuff like that. We've seen that before. Mark Zuckerman with us. He covers the Nationals. Mark, tell us about Ronaldo Lopez today, and then we'll talk a little bit about the bullpen and maybe is Andrew Miller in the sights of the Nationals. But let's start with the guy today.
Yeah, you're going to see an electric arm today from this kid. He's 22 years old, really burst out of the scene the last couple years. They were not necessarily expecting him to reach the big leagues this quickly. But because of some situations, they wound up calling him up a couple weeks ago to make his first career start. He comes out of the gates throwing 98, 99, and you're really, like, wow, blown away by this. But he was throwing everything over the plate and was giving up. He was hit hard in those first two innings. Now, once he got through that, they started calling more off-speed pitches, started breaking out his breaking ball, which is impressive in itself, and he wound up with 9 strikeouts before he left the game. So I'll be very curious to see in this start, do they try to mix it up a little more right out of the gates? Everybody knows, hey, young pitcher, you want to establish your fastball right away. Maybe in this case he needs to be able to show that other stuff and keep them off balance a little more. He's got, obviously, the ability to just blow you away with the repertoire that he has. He's still got to learn, obviously, as a pitcher, how to actually pitch.
Mark, I'm looking at FanGraphs, which I don't spend a lot of time on. FanGraphs is too complicated for me. But they're talking about his curveball against lefties. And last week, 20 curves, 14 for strikes, 0 put into play against the Dodgers. So, to me, with a left-handed lineup that the Dodgers or the Giants tend to put out, it could spell trouble today, at least for the lefties' belt, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. And that curveball, it was electric. And like I said, you had a lineup in the Dodgers that were, I mean, they were on top of every fastball he was throwing in the first couple innings. And the fact that he was able to make that adjustment tells you that he does certainly see the potential there. And it's going to be interesting what they do here with him because Joe Ross, who's a Bay Area native, is almost ready to come off the DL, and he'll get that spot back in the rotation. I could see a scenario in which Lopez winds up as one of those young guys that they throw out in the bullpen in September and maybe even October. All these bullpen issues we're just kind of getting at, they need to find someone potentially from in-house. You got a kid that can throw 99, 98 with a hammer of a curveball. If they can harness that for one inning at a time, they might do that before the season's over.
Great point.
Yeah.
Great point. Yeah, we'll see how that works out. Trade deadline coming up, and I know the Nationals and Cleveland are the two prominent teams still looking for bullpen help. The Giants are as well. But all of a sudden, the Giants may need a starting pitcher. They may need an outfielder. They somehow got in the Jay Bruce conversation after watching him make this park look like a Little League park. But what about the Nationals? What do you see happening before 4 o'clock Eastern time on Monday?
Well, I mean, they're trying. They're desperately trying. They really liked Aroldis Chapman. I mean, who wouldn't? But they made a serious run at him. And the problem, really, when it comes to Chapman or Andrew Miller or anybody else that could be out there is, are they willing to give up what it's going to take to get a pitcher of that caliber? And in the case of Chapman, you're talking about multiple top prospects. So every indication I've gotten is that Mike Rizzo, the GM, does not want to give up on Lopez, who we just talked about, Lucas Giolito, who at one point this summer was considered the number one prospect in baseball, Trey Turner, who you've got a little bit of a glimpse of, incredible speed and has kind of taken over the leadoff role for them, does not want to give up any of those three. And most teams, when they're asking for players, they want one of those guys, of course. So Rizzo has always had a long-term vision when it comes to the trade deadline. He does not like acquiring short-term rentals, and he certainly doesn't like giving up players that he has control of for a long time. But you get to a point that you say they're in their fifth year now of contention. They have yet to win a playoff series. You don't know how long this window is going to last with the group that you have. At some point, do you say we have to sacrifice the long-term and make a run at it short-term? And that's that dilemma that now I think over the next 48 hours you're going to have to come to grips with.
Mark Zuckerman here with Marty and Pat here at the Public House, 3rd and King. And hey, a couple of things. Denard Span, he hasn't really panned out so far for the Giants. And knowing what you know of Denard Span as opposed to what you're seeing the last couple of games, what do you see going on with Denard?
You know, I had a chance to talk to him the other day to catch up with him. First of all, one of my favorite players I've dealt with, both as a player and just as a person. Really good guy. Now, I think what people here may not understand is how much he went through last year injury-wise. He had 3 different surgeries and never really was himself. And then when he had the hip surgery at the end of the year, they told him 6-month recovery at least. It sounds like he knew that, 6 months maybe back on the field, but then it was still going to be a process. And so I think what you're seeing is a guy who's maybe still a little bit tentative out there. I think he is healthy. He knows that it's healed. But he's probably just in the back of his mind a little bit worried if I push it too hard, what might happen. And so maybe he hasn't been as explosive in theory as you might have thought. Now, I thought on the play he made the other night to get Rob Murphy of
the
that
catch.
Ball in deep right center, that looked like a guy who was going all out to make a play. So I would not be surprised knowing him. Once this gets into crunch time in September, maybe that comfort level will be there. He'll understand the magnitude of the games. I wouldn't be surprised if he turned it on a little bit at that point.
Well, the Giants, Nationals, Cubs, as I say, they're about seven teams for five spots. This is going to be an amazing run to the finish. Somehow the Washington Nationals are always in the Giants' future. Yeah. You just get that feeling, and they had the Strasburg thing a couple of years ago, the Zimmerman game.
That's right.
We had that, and we had people throwing the ball down the left field line. We had all sorts of stuff going on. How good is this Nationals team? Is this the best of the group?
I think it's the most talented of the group and the deepest group that they've had. Now, that doesn't mean they're perfect. As we're talking about, the bullpen is still an issue. I think there are a couple positions on the field where defense can be an issue. And like a lot of teams, they do struggle at times to manufacture runs when they really need to. Now, they've done a pretty good job of that in this series, actually. Two out hits, things like that. They've been waiting for that kind of stuff. But they do rely a little too much on the home run, I think. And you guys have seen, when you get to October, you can't rely on the home run. The Giants have been great at this. The Royals, obviously, were great at it. Do they have that in them once they get there to be able to deliver that one big hit you need to score the one or two runs that you need and not just rely on the home run? So those are the factors. But, again, this is a very good team. And when you can put two legitimate aces right now in Scherzer and Strasburg out there in, you know, potentially four out of five games in a series or four out of seven games in a series, that does give them an advantage if they can just figure out a way then to close those games out.
Who's the MVP of this thing? Murphy, Ramos, Jason Worth? I'm not even going to say Bryce Harper.
Harper has not been. No.
Who's the MVP of this thing?
It is Murphy. I think what he has done truly is remarkable. You're talking about a guy that's hitting roughly 350.
Amazing.
And if you extrapolate it out, it's a long way to go, obviously. But if you extrapolate it out, he's on pace for 32 homers, 120 RBIs. And I looked it up. The only players in the last, 50 years to hit 350 with 32 and 120, A-Rod, Pujols, Larry Walker, and there's one other I'm forgetting. So you're talking about five or six guys in the last 50 years have done that. And this is not a guy. I mean, look, he's always been a good hitter. Yeah. But everyone assumed that what they saw in October from him with the Mets was the anomaly. That's not who he could possibly be. He's been that guy for them all year, and it's been a remarkable thing to see. And they've needed it because Harper has really not been himself since April.
Where are you at with Bryce Harper? I mean, what's going on with him? Is he just trying to live up to his MVP status? What's going on with him?
You know, he had a wonderful April. He won Player of the Month, and everyone thought, okay, here we go again. And then they went into Chicago for a series against the Cubs, and Joe Maddon intentionally walked him, I believe, 11 times. And frankly, I think it threw him off some. After that series, you start to see him chase a little bit more, maybe get a little more impatient with it, because the problem was they're intentionally walking him, and the guy behind him at that point was Ryan Zimmerman, was not getting the job done. So they were losing games because of this. So I think he started to expand his zone a little bit. Since then, it has not been quite the same as that, but I think that kind of threw off everything. And he just looks out of whack with his mechanics right now. He's falling backwards sometimes. Right, he's popping up balls. He's really not hitting balls with authority. He only has 12 doubles this year. You know, which is odd for a player that good.
Sure.
So, look, I mean, he is too good. He works too hard. He understands the game too much to think this is going to go on forever. I think more than anything, he probably just needs to relax, clear his head. He'll have one day where all of a sudden he'll go 3 for 4, and he'll take off from there. But it's an issue. Really, for the last 2 to 3 months, he's been one of the least productive players in their lineup, and that's a staggering thing to think about.
Wow, what a weekend of baseball. Boy, nice to see you here. It's a pleasure, and you brought a good team with you. And, of course, the first couple of games, tension in the ninth inning. We've had a lot of that with the Giants, believe me, during the streak as well. So until you get the closer situated, I don't care who you have as the pitchers, but you got to get those last six outs, and that's the toughest thing to do in baseball. Yeah. Like Jim Palmer always said, last three outs are the toughest outs in baseball, and we're seeing it in the series so far. Appreciate it, Mark.
Thank you, Marty.
Right on, Mark. Yeah.
Colleague of Andy Baggerly.
Both Northwestern guys.
Classmate of his.
I love it. Very good. We'll have you on. We appreciate it.
Solid.
We'll definitely call you during the year.
Okay, thanks, guys.
That's Mark Zuckerman. More coming up.